You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Do policymakers have a clue? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With us today is Gio Chen, editor of Fidenza Macro blog. Hi, Gio.
Hey, Maggie. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. And welcome to Real Vision. So since this is your first time on, why don't you just give us a little background on yourself and an idea of how you approach the markets?
Yeah. So I've been trading global macro for over two decades. Used to run a FX trading desk at an investment bank, and I left 5 years ago to basically trade my own capital. So I've been doing that, running my own investment business, and recently just started writing the Fidenza Macro blog, where I talk about my views and suggest trade ideas and just try to help people become better traders.
Well, we certainly need that help now more than ever because, if we think about everything that's happening on the surface, which I think all of us can see, but then underneath, it's so complex right now. It's so difficult to figure out what the drivers are, what the repercussions might be. We saw today the market, it just seems nervous. The VIX is ticking up. We saw risk assets sell off, but not, before we were down and then up on a rumor or Twitter thread that maybe Russia was thinking about diplomacy, that immediately got knocked down. But, it's moving the market around. We had NASDAQ at a two-year low. We saw the Bank of England back in again supporting the pension system there and gilts looking like they're getting hit. The IMF warning of a recession. I mean, there's just so much every day that we're facing. What's top of mind for you as you're looking at this environment that we're in right now?
Yeah, the market has definitely been challenging because all the traditional relationships in global macro have broken down this year. And this year, policymakers are being more interventionist than ever. In fact, the past 2 months, as markets break, policymakers have just been intervening at a higher pace. At the moment, what I'm watching is the gilt market because we just saw 10-year gilt yields go back to the highs from last week after the BOE said that we'd come and intervene. So the market is definitely putting the BOE to the test right now. And this is putting pressure on other government bond curves. We saw treasury yields, 10-year treasury yields almost hit 4% today. And that's been putting pressure on the rest of the equity markets. I think the BOE is going to have to come in and either intervene more aggressively, or Liz Truss is just going to have to come out with a more credible, fiscal package.
Do they have the wherewithal, the policymakers, to get a handle on this problem? Because I think the worry is it starts to spiral and spread and perhaps spread just beyond the UK. I mean, we're talking about government bonds that are supposed to be really safe instruments. At least that's what most people were led to believe. How concerned are you that policymakers can quickly move to get a handle on this and that it doesn't become something that's more systemic?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time in my career where I've had to pay attention to gilts this much. And, we're now, the BOV is now in a place where they have to start to implement, kind of like the first stages of yield curve control. And this is not a place that you want to be because, the core problem in the UK right now is inflation. And by doing yield curve control, you're basically just accelerating inflation. You're not doing the tightening that you want. So, this is just a bad place. And I think the Fed is looking at what's happening in the gilt market, and they're probably thinking, we don't want to go there. I'm sure that treasury market dysfunction is probably at the top of their mind as well right now.
That's interesting, because if you had heard them, they just keep banging on every opportunity they get about how they're going to keep hiking rates no matter what. You know, that they're fully focused on inflation. Of course, they're not going to come out and say, oh, we're really concerned about, you know, some issue in the bond market. But they're, you know, it seems like they've been a bit tone deaf to everything that's happening in any kind of issue or problem happening abroad. And you know, they're all interconnected. In fact, there was a tweet, Rao responded to it today. I believe it was Lance Roberts, but it was the fourth worst bear market and no one wants to buy them, and meaning bonds. And Rao saying, listen, the system can't handle this. Are we starting to see things break down in the bond market in a way that we need to understand?
Yeah, I mean, when you have QT and you have, you know, some of the central banks like, you know, China, Japan kind of starting to step away from buying treasuries, that's a big concern. So even though the Fed is not publicly saying that they're concerned, I think, you know, behind the scenes, I'm pretty sure they are. You know, I've always thought that the Fed will continue to stay hawkish until something breaks. And we are getting close to that point right now. So, you know, I think the Fed is probably, in terms of their level of hawkishness, they're probably in overshoot territory right now. And, you know, we're probably going to see more intervention from perhaps the BOV and other central banks down the pipeline.
Are you in the camp that is concerned that there's going to be a policy misstep here? Because they've done everything they can to convince us that there will be no pivot. So how can they do anything to address the situation that's unfolding if they are concerned about what's happening in the treasury market without looking ridiculous?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be hard for them, for the Fed at least, to pivot today. But I do think that given a little bit of daylight, let's say, you know, CPI starts to fall down to a 7 handle, 6 handle by the end of this year, they might start to relax on their hawkishness.
We'll have to wait for that. So we are dependent. We've got a CPI reading coming out this week. So can they stick by that inflation fighting, you know, on that inflation fighting path? There's no indication that we're going to see that number come down rapidly. It looks like it's going to stay elevated.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen this month. And the CPI, you know, does look like it's going to come in pretty elevated. You know, the Cleveland Fed is predicting that's going to come in 0.1 higher than what the market expects. But, you know, I think the market really has a bad record of predicting the CPI. So it could really be all over the place. Like I'm personally not going to go into that number positioned one way or another. I'd rather just wait for it to come out because it could really land anywhere. I do have to say this though, if it does come in lower than expected, I'll be jumping on that move and I won't be fading it, because I think, you know, market dynamics right now, positioning all support, bit of a short squeeze in equities, you know, a reversal of the recent dollar strength. I think this is all one big momentum trade that has stretched too far, in my opinion, and position is pretty one-sided right now.
So when you say jumping on it, how would you trade that? What would that look like? Would you be doing it through equities and through currencies? Would you be across the board looking to take advantage of the fact that it seems lopsided in a lot of these markets?
Yeah, I'd be looking to sell the dollar. So maybe just go long euro on that and also go long S&P futures as well as silver as well.
Oh yeah, we actually have a question on precious metals that I'm going to get to in just a moment. By the way, two things. If you have a question, you probably are getting sick of hearing me say this, but our live chat is not operating on the website right now as we upgrade. Thank you for your patience. So go ahead and hit us in the YouTube chat or drop it in the comments, or you can tag us on Twitter using AskRV or tag Real Vision, and we'll make sure to get them in. And I should also note that Gio, the trooper that he is joining us from Singapore, where it is literally the middle of the night. So you should be sleeping, but instead you're with us, which we appreciate. But it's fantastic because I'm really, really curious to hear your view, because I think it probably feels a little different where you're sitting, you know. So the people who are sitting in Europe dealing with the energy crisis, dealing with what's happening in the UK pension system, Credit Suisse, et cetera, feels a little different from some folks who are sitting in the US, where we haven't really seen those earnings hit that people are talking about. We got a lot of questions recently about high yield bonds. Why haven't we seen spreads blowing out if we are starting to see things break? What do you make of that, Gio? Are there some parts that maybe are, or areas that there's too much complacency, or do you think it's sort of, you know, the positioning is appropriate given the amount of risk out there?
I actually think the amount of positioning is appropriate given the amount of risk. If you just look at equities, I mean, almost everyone I know is already bearish right now. A lot of people are in cash. People are hedged. A lot of people are outright short. A lot of people own protection. I just saw that, you know, institutional traders' net speculative options premiums are close to levels where they were during the great financial crisis. So, you know, I think this equity sell-off is kind of running out of steam, and we have the conditions that kind of precede a squeeze, but we really just need a trigger. Just looking at price action today, even like 10-year treasury yields just almost touched 4%. And equities are, you know, down 75 basis points. It's not a disaster, but they're definitely holding in okay. You know, the gilt market is tantruming again, but sterling is only down, you know, 35 pips. So I do think that the market is trading a little bit exhausted here. Mm. And all you need is a little bit of daylight and things are going to start reversing.
Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
That's so interesting. And speaking of that daylight, I want to run a clip from a conversation that Larry McDonald had with George Whitehead about the complexities of the situation we're facing with the UK and Europe, and really importantly, Ukraine. Let's have a listen to that and we'll talk on the other side.
But it is a classic now, the level of yields for real money at the long end of UK market. Everyone's worrying about the panic of when the Bank of England stops a support operation, supposedly on the 14th. The level of yields we've got now with the dynamic shape of new issuance being shorter, real money will turn up to buy the long end of the market, which is their natural home. International investors will buy the short end of the market because sterling is attractive. And there's an enormous amount of redemptions over the next year where that cash will be reinvested in the UK with sterling anywhere close to these kind of levels.
What are the implications there?
Implications, I think money then may get taken away from other markets, but the biggest sea change will obviously be if there's any change in the war in Ukraine. Ukraine we haven't talked about, and I think it's a situation nobody has a quick fix for. Mr. Mastrinky does, but you know, he's on his own planet. I think you will see any kind of change in the tone of that will put the Fed under more pressure to take their foot off the pedal, because people will reduce dollar assets once they feel there's any kind of glint of light.
And you can see that full interview, which is part of our Make or Break series, on the website. They really dig into the situation with the gilt market. So it's super interesting for just some context around that, as well as, you know, all of these geopolitics with this is what we're talking about. I mean, you're trying to not only look at economic situations and relationships that are behaving strangely, but you have something as unpredictable as war and what's going to happen, you know, trying to figure that out, which no one can. So how do you approach something like that? We saw how sensitive the market is because, you know, one Twitter headline and we saw a reaction, they walked it back and equities ended lower. But to your point about people being sort of maybe these positions being stretched and everybody on one side of the trade, how are you thinking about the Ukraine situation?
Yeah, you know, I feel like the global macro environment has kind of stepped away from focusing on Ukraine. But we're now reaching a point where, you know, Ukraine is just taking territory back so quickly that the current status quo is unsustainable. So there needs to be a resolution, I think, coming in the next couple months, where either Putin doubles down somehow, or he kind of, you know, steps back or tries to negotiate some kind of truce or something. And obviously, yeah, in the latter situation, you know, if the market sees some kind of de-escalation in Ukraine, that's going to be seen as positive risk. It's going to be seen as negative dollar, and it's going to be seen as less pressure on the inflation front.
Do you feel like the dollar's peaked here?
I think we're in a peaking process, and it's messy. It's, you know, it's not going to be in a straight line, but you know, we are in a peaking process, I believe, just based on positioning, based on what central banks are doing in terms of intervention. You know, the Bank of Japan, for example, intervening to sell dollar yen.
We have a question from Necro Capital on gold, and you mentioned silver before. So how are you thinking about, first you talk to us about silver, and what you're thinking there, and then maybe follow up with gold if that's on your radar at all.
Yeah, so silver and gold have been really interesting. So first of all, you know, just looking at the technicals themselves, gold kind of broke through support at 1680 last month, and then has since kind of chopped back up through that level and back down. So I do think, you know, gold is outperforming considering where real yield suggests gold should be. So, you know, I'm long-term bullish on gold. Short-term, you know, it's going to be choppy, but long-term I'm bullish. Now, silver is interesting because the relative price action in silver has actually been really strong, and it just feels like the market is short. You know, every dip's getting bought. The rallies are pretty violent. So I do think at some point when you see you know, the US recession formulating and you know, like the market kind of angling for a Fed pivot, that we're gonna see a pretty big rally in silver up into the, you know, mid-20s.
I'm just going through all these questions. Thank you guys. They're great. Bear with me as I'm sort of operating here. Andrew K asking, is a recession priced in?
Yeah, I do think a recession is getting priced in. You know, equities down where they are, it's definitely priced in. But, you know, I think that when the numbers actually come in recessionary, when you see unemployment tick up, jobless claims tick up, you know, ISM readings fall well into the 40s, I think that's actually going to be good for the market. Like, I think bad news will actually be good for stocks, because the Fed is just, the market is most fearful of the Fed right now. They're not really as fearful of, you know, earnings recession. In fact, in the 70s, when you did have an earnings recession, that was already after the market had bottomed and started to rally.
So do you see equities purely reacting over whether the Fed pivots or not? Is that the key for equities? Why would that bad news, a recession news, be good for equities? Is it because they anticipate the fact that the Fed will revert or reverse?
Yeah. I think though the market will start to take hikes out of the curve as a first step, and then they'll start to price in a pivot down the line, and that'll be bullish.
What is there a scenario, or have you thought about a scenario where the Fed doesn't hike anymore but leaves rates elevated? What does that do to equities?
Yeah, I think now if you were telling me that was going to happen today with the curve where it is, that would actually be bullish because we do have quite a few hikes priced into the curve. So if the Fed doesn't hike anymore, or they hike, you know, in the next meeting and stop, that's actually pretty bullish. And then, you know, keeping rates there, now that's probably a different story. I think you could see a scenario where it could be bullish at first, but as the recession gets long in the tooth and the Fed is not responding, then that could flip into a bearish scenario.
So Melson has an interesting question from YouTube. Can the Fed not keep things afloat through U.S. dollar swaps abroad while continuing to tighten domestically? Data isn't anywhere close to the point of a Fed pivot, hence the market reverting. And by data, I mean inflation data.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, if they're providing more dollar swaps abroad, I'm not sure if that fixes anything. I think the focus should be on domestic policy. I'm not sure if there's anything broken in terms of that the Fed, you know, needs to fix with dollar swaps at the moment.
At the moment, yeah, that's the worry, right? You know, if we get to that point. In a situation where there's any, the Fed's kind of in this difficult spot though, isn't it? Because any sign, if they are concerned about the global system, say, or they're concerned maybe that, you know, they want to see what their policy moves so far have done, but any sign that they are stopping or pivoting is going to unleash an equity rally. Doesn't that work against what they're trying to do? And Serge asking from the RV site, won't a rebound in fuel prices also make it more difficult for the Fed to pivot?
Yeah. So first of all, about fuel prices, they are starting to kind of, you know, bottom out and tick higher. So that's definitely a concern. If oil has back above 100, then that would definitely, you know, put a cap on any potential equity rally. I think the key is that any recovery in equities needs to be, you know, driven by a real credible weakness in economic growth. So the one that we saw in June, August, wasn't that credible. And you know, I wrote in my blog that I was going short on that rally, you know, back in August. And that was because the economy was just too strong. The data was still too hot. So I do think that the data does need to come in weaker.
That's interesting. Because we're seeing it in some places, but it's been surprisingly strong. I mean, there are those people who are looking at what they say forward-looking indicators and saying, okay, we're starting to see things crater and it could happen quickly. But then there's been enough strong data that it's really hard to make that case across the board. When do you expect to see widespread signs? Do you think we're in recession already, by the way? And when would you expect that to start showing up?
Yeah, I think, you know, when the economic historians look back on today, I think they'll probably include, you know, October as within the recessionary period. And You know, I do think the conditions are ripe for reversal, but you do need the trigger. And that is what's missing right now. Mm-hmm. So I will be looking out, you know, at the data closely. But in the meantime, I think the key is just to be nimble and tactical, and not necessarily, you know, put all your chips in any one trade.
Colin asking, how would a China reopening affect your view? Does it affect your view?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you expect one? It might be the important question.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the party congress in a week's time, and some people are talking about maybe they're going to lift or relax zero COVID policy. You know, what goes on in the CCP is kind of unknowable, so I'm not going to try to forecast that. But if Monday rolls around and they have relaxed zero COVID policy, I think the knee-jerk reaction is going to be, it's going to be bullish. But then you have to think about, you know, what's that additional bubble of demand going to do to inflation around the world at some point? And that's probably going to be negative for bonds. And at some point, it's going to extend the bear market, around the world in equities.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
Annabelle asking, is a global, I don't know if you look at crypto at all, but is a global sovereign debt crisis bearish for Bitcoin? I think another way to ask that is does Bitcoin track risk assets, or do you see a divergence? Is that an asset class you're looking at all?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's short-term bearish because of the risk-off dynamics that a global sovereign debt crisis brings. But I think it's long-term bullish because of the intervention that it forces upon policymakers. And the intervention tends to be, you know, inflationary. It tends to be things that are positive for Bitcoin, just like, you know, what happened back in 2020.
You know, we have, especially because you talked about having a focus on currencies for a long part of your career, we had some guests on last week that were really looking at the Hong Kong dollar peg and very concerned about that as well. What's your thought on that?
Yeah. People have been talking about the Hong Kong dollar peg breaking for almost my entire career of 20 years. So, you know, for me, like, I don't trade that. Like, when it happens, it'll happen. Until then, you'll burn a lot of premium and pay a lot of carry trying to bet on that. I think you know, the HKMA has the financial means to protect the peg. It's not gonna break, like, you know, how Soros, you know, took down sterling. It took on the BOV. When it does break, it will be a purely political decision. It'll be like somebody, you know, probably in China thinking, oh, you know, I think it's time that Hong Kong gets repegged to the CNY or maybe floating or something like that. So I think if it does go down, that's how it would happen. But it's not something I'm, you know, trying to bet on right now.
Mm. So do you, we started our show with kind of a rhetorical question, really, like, do policymakers have a clue? I think that really, you know, what we're trying to figure out is, are they making the situation worse, or do you sense that behind the scenes there is more coordinated, maybe conversation, because we're not seeing action, but conversation about where the strains are in the system. Because the UK pension system came awfully close, you know, to blowing up in a way that nobody wanted to see. There are concerns in the US that we're not immune from that either, that all these pension funds and asset managers operated, you know, more like hedge funds in the low interest rate environment and less like really, you know, staid, boring funds that they're supposed to be as they were looking for yield, and that maybe some of them have exposure that is going to get messy if these markets keep behaving like this. Do you worry about that? And do you feel like policymakers have a handle on that?
I mean, this is what makes global macro crazy, right? Like, until, you know, the past couple of weeks, I didn't know what an LDI was. Like, I didn't think pension funds were acting like highly leveraged hedge funds. And I'm guessing that, you know, the Bank of England didn't really know either. And the Fed doesn't really know every risk that's inherent in the system. So so far, like, I'm not seeing any public evidence that the central banks are talking to each other in any real meaningful way. Mm-hmm. I think they are also kind of winging it right now. And I think, you know, with Jerome Powell, he decided to make a bold leap and say, you know, we're just gonna like bring down the sledgehammer and just overshoot all market expectations on how hawkish we can get and let's see what happens. And I'm sure, you know, he's probably nervous right now, you know, because of the potential like market dysfunction dynamics there. But, you know, hopefully they have a plan in place if things break.
So it's interesting because, you know, here's hoping. I mean, that's a little frightening, I think, for all of us who lived through, you know, 2008, 2009 and the aftermath of the great financial crisis. Presumably, they've learned some things from that. I mean, you saw the BOE move very quickly. The market's still testing them, but there's that. But for that, you know, for the risk that you just stated really out there, my takeaway from listening to you today is that you are kind of keeping your powder dry, waiting because you think there's going to be a big reversion. You think that there's going to that a lot of these trades are lopsided and you could see a big rally in equities, a big sell-off in the dollar. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do think we're getting close to that point. And you know, it's also hard to be positioned the opposite way. Like it's hard to be, you know, pressing equity shorts right now, pressing dollar longs right now, because it's going to be choppy as well. So I think the volatility event is more likely to be in the other direction, you know, an equity squeeze, dollar sell off, and maybe, you know, I'm not counting on this as much, but maybe like some kind of bounce or recovery in bonds.
It's so interesting because it sounds like your macro head is worried, but your trader gut tells you that things have gone too far and that there's some kind of move coming. And it's most likely the surprise is what people don't expect, which is the upside in equities, the weakness in the dollar. Would you be worried about that being so that's pretty short term, right? What's your time horizon medium term, though? Do you worry more, you know, again, about some of those macro issues coming to the fore medium term? Is that a tradable rally or is that the beginning of a more substantial swing, do you think?
Yeah, I think my time frame tends to be kind of short to medium term. So like 2 weeks to several months. But longer term, you know, I do think that, I don't want to be too long the dollar either in short equities or under invested in equities. So I guess both on both time horizons, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. And it's, I don't know if I'd call it a contrarian view, but sort of very appreciated because it's often when things feel, scary, you know, that you've kind of got to think what's the least expected or what's the, you know, where's the probability, really weighted toward. So it's really interesting to hear that when things are looking horrible and the Nasdaq's at a 2-year low, you're kind of like getting ready.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's, you know, definitely afraid of recession. And I'm saying, come on, just bring it. Like, let the recession begin so we can, you know, let the Fed kind of stop being so hawkish. And I think it'll actually bring a sigh of relief to the market.
Well, here's hoping. Gio, it was fantastic to have you today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Sri Lankan Prime Minister's house set alight.
The first is authoritarianism. The second is corruption.
The FOMC is strongly resolved to bring inflation down to 2%.
Home builders are abandoning homes.
Massive protests going on here.
We're going to see a material impact here on growth and indeed on earnings, which my colleague...
Change is happening and you can fear it.
But you're not going to stop it.
There are really only two countries in Europe that have managed to maintain a replacement level birth rate, France and Sweden.
This is the biggest bubble in the history of the world, and you have no clue.
It's all herd mentality. It's the same as the property market.
What happens over the next few months could define what happens over the next few years. So we want to make sure that you understand why. You've probably realized that we really have been listening to you.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.